All right. I'm going to call this hearing of the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee to order. Today is January 12th, 2023. We do have a quorum present, so we'll move right to the minutes. So that's the first item on the agenda. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll move the minutes, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Representative Scott moves the minutes of January 10th, 2023. Any discussion to the minutes? All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? All right. The minutes are approved. First on our agenda is House File 4. So Representative Gomez, if you want to come on up, I will move that House File 4 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Gomez, I know you do have an A-17 amendment. I will move the A-17 amendment. Representative Gomez, if you could explain the A-17 as well as you can, that would be great.
Thank you, Chair Becker Finn and members of the committee. Thanks for having me. So I'm going to explain the A-17 very simply because that's what I can do about it. I think if there are further questions, there are some folks here to help me out with those. I mean, basically, like all of the data provisions in House File 4, the amendment is just designed to ensure that the existing or that personal data is only used for the purposes for which it's intended. You know, we have to collect certain personal information to establish someone's identity and their residence in order to issue a driver's license. And so we just want to make sure that that data is used how it's intended. And my co-author, Representative Perez Vega, has joined us. So we're both thanking you for having us. And yeah, if there are further questions about the amendment, then we might have to phone a friend.
Yeah, it's Nathan Hopkins Day. If we need him, members, any questions to the A-17? Representative Johnson.
Chair Becker Finn, Representative Gomez. I see in the A-17 it requires destruction of any data 14 days after it's been validated. What's the current statute and requirements for personal data of normal Minnesota residences with the data and the destruction date?
Representative Gomez, I'm guessing you may want to phone a friend on this one, or do you know the answer?
I would love to, Chair Becker.
All right, Mr. Hopkins.
So, Madam Chair and members, so if you look at the A-17 on 1.19, it says notwithstanding section 138.17. That's the state's standard statute with regard to document retention policies that it requires from state agencies. So the Department of Public Safety, which contains the Driver and Vehicle Administration Services Department, they'll have their own document retention schedule that says how long they keep certain information. So I don't know exactly what that says, but this would not withstand that section, which would require them to have a retention schedule. So I'm not sure exactly what the current retention period would be, but this would set it at 14 days.
Follow-up, Representative Johnson.
Chair Becker Finn, Representative Gomez, that was my concern, because we're setting up a different schedule where the data is kept less time than the data for the regular Minnesota citizen. I think we should have everything equal and everything be the same if we're going to go through this process, but now you're giving special attention to those that aren't here legally.
Response, Representative Gomez or Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Chair Becker Finn and Representative Johnson. So, you know, the intention here is really just to ensure that data that people provide to access driving privileges are used for that purpose and no other purpose. Thank you.
Any other discussion to the underlying A-17 amendment? Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand your purpose for it. So with this new knowledge, would you consider changing that to make all things on an equal playing field so that they're retaining that information as long as everyone else's information.
Representative Grossel, I believe that would be a we'd have a lot more testifiers here if we were changing everything in that statute. But Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn and Representative Grossel. I mean, I'm sort of submitting the materials like this, and that's my intention, with what we're doing today.
Representative Grossel.
Okay. Your intention is to submit it as is, no changes?
If you're asking if I'm willing to change what I'm presenting, this is the bill before us, and the amendments are what I'm presenting for the committee's consideration today. So I think that's what we're going to be considering.
Yep. And I'll note too that I did extend the amendment deadline because I did realize there was a time crunch with the official engrossed edition. So members had plenty of time to file amendments if they would have liked to. And we do have an amendment to the amendment. But any further follow-up on your question, Representative Grossel? Okay. Any other discussion to the A-17? Representative Finke.
Thank you, Becker-Finn. And I just want to make sure, and perhaps this is being researched right now, but is it longer? Do we know that that's accurate?
Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, so I think that the department would have to tell us exactly what their retention schedule says in terms of how long they keep documents and applications regarding other license types, other driver's license types.
Representative Finke.
Okay, I would just like to make sure that what we're hearing is actually the case in statute before we say that that is not being honored by the authors.
Thank you. And with Representative Scott, the A-17.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and that was going to be my question. I was going to ask if there's anybody here from DPS that could speak to their retention schedule. I don't know who all the folks are that work for them. I don't.
There is someone here.
There is somebody from there. I don't know, Madam Chair, if they know the answer to that question.
Yeah, and feel free, if you're willing to come up and know the answer, we would love to have the answer. Thank you. All right, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representatives. My name is Katie Madigan, and I'm with the Department of Public Safety, Driver and Vehicle Services. And our current retention schedule is 10 years, so we would keep the documents for 10 years before destroying them.
Right. Follow-up, Representative Scott.
Well, that is quite a difference and quite an inconsistency. And I've had a longstanding issue with the data retention schedules, and they're all over the place in government, and there's no consistency. And actually, the data retention, is it a commission? There's some body that I'm drawing a blank now on who sets all of that and who is supposed to overlook it. There's a board that is consistent of somebody from the Attorney General's office, somebody from all these different agencies, the courts, everything that's supposed to look at that and scrutinize it on a regular basis, and it's just not happening. But that's why in this committee that oversees data practices, we've often now been saying this is how long you can and can't keep information. We try to put something there, and then if the agency has a pushback, then we always hear about that. But it's a longstanding problem, and the data retention schedule it's not in statute anywhere, so that we can just easily look it up as members of the legislature. But it is really concerning if we have an inconsistency for one set of folks compared to another set of folks in the length of time that data is kept. And one of the things that agencies have to do, I'm sorry, I'm going to give a little mini lesson here, but one of the things that agencies are tasked with in statute is they are supposed to be tasked with keeping that data secure. And so I understand the bill's author wanting to keep a tight rein on this specific data. But at the same time, there really shouldn't be inconsistencies like that. And so I think that's something that we need to look at as a committee, quite frankly, is explore this whole issue in greater depth. It does concern me, Madam Chair, that this is only a 14-day retention schedule for this particular data set compared to everybody else's. So with that, I mean, we are where we are. we didn't know that information until this morning. So, and Madam Chair, while I've got the floor or the table, I guess, I noticed that the motion was to send this to Ways and Means, and I'm wondering now if these other amendments go on that speak to the Secretary of State and voter, if that shouldn't go to State Gov or the Elections Committee, something like that. It seems to me like that might be, since the amendments that were taken, that might be the course that we might want to consider. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn, and thank you, Representative Scott. Just two things. First, on your last point on the referrals, I did run the language that we're going to be adopting by the elections chair because it really aligns with kind of what's already in place. He doesn't feel like he needs to see it because he doesn't feel like the amendment turns it into an elections bill. So that just FYI, I mean, I understand there could be sort of a differing kind of interpretation of that, but that's what the elections chair is feeling like about the language that you're proposing. And so I just wanted to point out for folks that the term non-compliant license, because this isn't the Transportation Committee, I didn't know this right until I kind of got into this bill, but non-compliant license, it doesn't refer specifically, it doesn't actually have anything to do with somebody's immigration status. It means that those licenses that are regular Class D licenses and are not enhanced or real ID. So like I have a non-compliant license, and so the data provisions here would apply to all non-compliant license holders, citizens and non-citizens, regardless of immigration status. So I understand your point about treating different data sets differently, but that's really about those sort of different classes of licenses that are available to people and the level of, or you know, the number of documents that they have to submit in order to get those credentials. Of course, the Real ID stuff is mostly federal law. We don't have a lot of like kind of say over that, but just I wanted to clarify that because I think, yeah, I'm not exactly sure if that was clear to you that it's not just for like people who have different immigration statuses, for whom that would be the data retention schedule to all Class D non-compliant license holders.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since we have a representative here from DPS, I'm wondering if you could give kind of an explanation of why the data retention schedule is 10 years and what your thoughts are, if you have any, on this change to 14 days. And she's looking at somebody above her.
Well,
am I going to get fired for answering this?
Representative Scott, the issue before us today is whether this A-17 amendment is going to go on. You know, we have next week, we're going to get into Chapter 13 in more depth. I know we've got a lot of new members who are not familiar with it. So, you know, we can dig into all those things. But, I mean, we could point to all kinds of places where the data retention is different, as you mentioned. So I think before we get too far afield, we've got our work to do in
right.
this committee. If somebody has the answer quickly, that's fine. We're getting he does not have the answer quickly. So if you could follow up, you know, I'm not going to parade you down here to say you don't know. So if you could follow up with my staff, we can get that information out to folks.
Yeah, my concern, Madam Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, was that evidently there's probably a reason for 10 years, and I don't want to be crippling what they are able to do in the agency by shortening by so significantly. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn. And I would you just said what I was going to say, which is as a new member, I want to thank Lee Scott for bringing up this data retention inconsistencies. And it sounds like as someone who's very concerned about data practices, we'll have to take that up. It sounds like a much larger issue than we're dealing with in this amendment today. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Niska.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Gomez, based on what you said, I'm curious whether there are a number of people whose data who have applied for non-compliant licenses, including yourself, and have data at the department. I'm wondering if this language will require the department to destroy a significant amount of data that they have that they've held for more than 14 days.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you. And I hope that my friend was leaving so that somebody else could come up and field that question. Nobody's standing up to help me out, but I mean, I wouldn't know the answer to that question. That's something that DVS would have to help me out with if they were able.
I don't know if it's right. I don't think it's right.
We can roll up another chair. We don't have to keep, stay put, Representative Perez Vega.
Representative Perez Vega and I may be calling our friends a lot during this
That's all right. Chapter 13 and data stuff is everybody's favorite topic. please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jordan Holtofter-Hyde, and I'm the Legislative Director for the Department of Public Safety. The bill does not reference if it is retroactive, so at this point in time, I don't believe we would treat it as retroactive, but we'll need to confirm with DVS attorney.
All right. Any follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That seems like an important thing that we should clear up and get a better understanding of what the effect of that is and whether the department has the resources to actually carry that out if that's a large administrative task that they're going to have after passage of this bill.
Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, looking at the first engrossment on page 9, lines 24 to 26, the effective date for the act, says that it's effective for driver's licenses and Minnesota identification card application and issuance on or after October 1st, 2023. So I don't believe that there's any intent of retroactivity for any of the provisions in the bill.
Okay, everybody's nodding.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this issue is actually more straightforward than we're thinking it is. The information about the people who are applying for these driver's license is retained. That's one of the main goals of this bill, is to make sure we know who are on our roads, and that's a public safety issue. The only documents that would be destroyed after 14 days are the identity documents that are used to apply for those driver's license. So the issue there is that we don't want that information to be used to determine immigration status by the federal government, because that is not the goal here at our state level. And so just to be clear, all of the information about these people who are applying for these driver's license will be retained according to the normal timeline. It is just the identity documents that they use to apply for those driver's license that would be destroyed.
Thank you, Immigration Attorney Representative Weiss. Representative Johnson, and then we're going to move to the amendment to the amendment.
Chair Beckerfin, members, one of the reasons they keep this data for 10 years is a big problem that we have. I know I'm sure Representative Grossel in his career in law enforcement has dealt with it. I've dealt with it numerous times, and that's identity theft. How they get the identity theft and they get driver's license. We have people that have falsified driver's license and gotten driver's license under other people's names. And because they keep that data, they can verify and go back to the verification person, so the person whose identity was stolen, things can be flagged by looking up the records and the documents that they have to verify that they're giving the right person their actual identity back. And without those records, it makes it very difficult to go back and look at things, because it's when somebody steals your driver's license identification, it might be 2-3 years before you find out. And if those records are destroyed, there's no way to get your identity back, and somebody could actually assume your life because the documentation isn't there anymore.
And as we all just learned, apparently it's 10 years. With that, Representative Scott, I understand there's an amendment to the amendment, the A-19. Representative Scott, would you like to move the A-19?
Yes, Madam Chair and committee, I would like to move the A-19.
Representative Scott, would you like to tell us what the A-19 does?
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the bill's author and others that worked on. I submitted the A-18, and that got a conversation going about the A-18 and what it was trying to accomplish. So this language was compromise language, as we say around here. And what this bill or what this amendment does is it just says that the information that does pertain to a person's immigration status can be shared with the Office of the Secretary of State for purposes of making the voter rolls accurate, basically. And this also says that the Office of the Secretary of State cannot disseminate or share that information beyond their office. And so that's what the amendment does. And I did speak with the Secretary of State on the phone last night. I don't know if he was able to get anybody here in the room this morning, but he said he is more than glad to work on this issue going forward if there's any changes to the language that need to happen. So with that, I would ask for member support. He was supported, by the way, but if there's anybody here that wants to speak to that, I don't know.
To our bill author, Representative Gomez, your response on the A-19.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Becker-Finn, and thank you so much, Representative Scott, for bringing this amendment forward and working with us kind of late in the evening last night on it. You know, as Representative Scott said, it's just designed to ensure that the existing data sharing relationship between the department and the Secretary of State's office remains intact, you know, just for the purposes of administering elections. So I hope members will support it.
And I, Madam Chair, thanks.
Representative Scott.
I do want to thank staff who worked on this, both nonpartisan and partisan, who worked on this late into the evening last night, and then we're here for an 8:30 meeting. So thank you.
Yeah, for the record, it wasn't actually that late for how late we sometimes work here at the, but late for the beginning of session, yes. It did make the 8:15 cutoff in our email inboxes. So yeah, and I do want to thank everyone for working together. This is how it's supposed to work, that you guys have the conversations and we reach some compromise language. So Representative Scott, we're going to go on to the A-19. So Representative Scott moves the A-19 amendment to the A-17 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? If the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. So now back to the underlying A-17 amendment. And just to be clear, Representative Scott, so we're not going to be moving the A-18. So members can go ahead and recycle that one in their packets.
That would be correct.
All right. Thank you. We've already had quite a bit of discussion on the underlying A-17. So I'm going to move on to the A-17 as amended. All those in favor of the A-17 amendment as amended, I'm going to renew my motion on that. Please say aye.
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 All those opposed?
No.
All right. The motion prevails and the amendment as amended is adopted. All right. With that, we will get to the bill in the shape that the authors would like. So we are on House File 4 as amended. And I understand that we do have a couple testifiers, but Representative Gomez, I'll go to you to talk about the bill.
Great. Thank you so much, Chair Becker-Finn and members of the committee. House File 4 is driver's licenses for all. It reverts us to pre-2003 Minnesota policy. For decades up until 2003, people were able to demonstrate that they, you know, through a written and behind the wheel test, that they understood the rules of the road and could safely operate a vehicle without regard to immigration status. In 2003, this policy was changed. And so this just, you know, allows people access to a driver's license. I just really briefly, you know, we had a hearing, we had heard hours of testimony in the Transportation Committee a couple nights ago. We had an early morning session and then an evening session. We heard from directly impacted people. We heard about what the impacts of not having a license are on someone's life. We heard stories of people being deported for getting pulled over for a brake light that was out and not having a driver's license and getting into those proceedings. We also heard from a wide variety of businesses, including the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I actually have a letter I'm going to ask the page maybe can hand out. We heard from law enforcement about how this is a public safety issue. We received a letter of support from the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association supporting this bill as submitted yesterday. We heard from faith leaders who talked to us about how this is an issue related to human dignity and respect for everyone's humanity. We heard from labor leaders. And one of the things that somebody pointed out to me was, you know, that in previous years, we heard a lot from people who themselves didn't have access to a driver's license. And on Tuesday, we heard a lot from children, young people whose parents hadn't had access to a driver's license. And that, to me, that was some of the most compelling testimony of hearing you know, young people talk about what it's like to know that when you're getting in a car with your parents that you might be separated from them, and that kind of the fear and the trauma that, you know, some of these young people were carrying from their early childhood into their young adulthood because of this policy. So, you know, but we really are here today to discuss Article 2, the data protections, which begin on page 10. And as I mentioned, you know, the intent with the data protection provisions were really just to ensure that the personal data that has to be collected is just used for its intended purposes and not other purposes. So I don't know if
go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I just want to address the testimony that was given in transportation, kind of echoing with Representative Gomez stated, but also in regard to a conversation that I held with one of our colleagues in the House, Representative Ethan Chan, who received his driver's license before he became a citizen. And folks like himself who are citizens that had received their licenses prior to becoming citizens, and the challenge that it must be for folks in our immigrant community that want to become citizens, that are working to become citizens, the challenge that it is for them to accomplish that without having a driver's license. The challenges and the fear that go beyond their head of trying to become citizens while they may be pulled over illegally or driving illegally, or that's not an option because they're following the law. And I just want to highlight that and the importance of what good citizenship is allowing to make it easier for folks to be a part of this country who want, who work hard, who have children that are citizens of this country. Deep thought. Muchas gracias. Thank you, member. Thank you, Chairwoman, and thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you. We do have a couple testifiers who had signed up, so I'm going to move to them. I have Ms. Vina Iyer. Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Becker Finn, Lead Scott, Chair Gomez, Representative Perez-Vega, and committee members. I am Vina Iyer. I am the Executive Director of the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota, and we are proud to be here to testify in support of HF4, the Restoration of Driver's Licenses for All, and particularly today about the data privacy and protection provisions of this bill, which are critical in this age of ubiquitous data sharing and data mining. The data provisions of this bill, as amended by A17 and A19, primarily amend Minnesota Statute 171.12, the main data privacy and disclosure section of the driver's licensing statute. The bill adds a subdivision 1 to Section 171.12, which prohibits DPS from sharing certain information collected during the driver's licensing process, particularly information related to citizenship and immigration status. Walking through the data privacy provisions of the bill and the amendments, I'll start first with the first engrossment, then turn to the A17 and then the A19. In the first engrossment of the bill, Article 2, Section 4 adds that subdivision 11 that I was talking about. It prohibits DVS from releasing information that identifies or has the effect of identifying an individual's citizenship status or lawful presence outside of DVS. Next, turning to your attention to the A17, this provides additional detail regarding the type of information that is generally prohibited from release under the new Section 171.12, Subdivision 11. This provision requires that prior to the disclosure of any data regarding a non-compliant driver's license, regardless of who has that license, DPS or its agents must obtain a certification that the recipient will not use the data for civil immigration purposes or disclose the data to an immigration enforcement agency. It also establishes penalties for the violation pursuant to the Data Privacy Act. Finally, turning to the A19 amendment, this amendment clarifies and has been discussed already that that this bill would maintain that data sharing relationship between DVS and the Secretary of State. In short, the data privacy provisions of this bill and the amendments focus on placing strict restrictions on sharing data that could be used to identify an applicant's citizenship or immigration status. The provisions ensure that the routine act of applying for a driver's license does not open the door to deportation and family separation. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list, I have Linus Chan. Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Chair Becker Finn and the rest of the committee for having me. My name is Linus Chan. I teach at the University of Minnesota Law School, and I run a clinic that represents people held in immigration detention by ICE. I'm here specifically to talk about why these provisions are so necessary and what is actually happening both nationally and in other states. And I want to turn attention to a couple things. One, there was a report that was issued by Georgetown, which was entitled Immigration Dragnet, that really details exactly and how information such as driver's information is being used in a certain amount of database and for immigration enforcement. To give an idea of the scope and the expansion of the use of this data, I want to point to the fact that in 2008, the Department of Homeland Security and Immigration and Customs Enforcement specifically spent around $75 million on data analysis and getting data. In 2021, that number expanded to over $400 million. Part of that, much of that spending has been on, in the creation and the use of databases, but it also includes about $50 million on spending for data brokers. One of the important provisions of this bill and this amendment specifically, which is to prevent the reselling of data from private data brokers such as LexisNexis in order to do so. And I wanted to give a couple really quick idea of what's going on here. So because of this access on driver's information, it's estimated that one in three adults or over 88 million people, drivers in the United States, ICE has their information already. There is increased push to get access to facial recognition that is also stored with the databases of a lot of state driver's license. And this is already happening in terms of other states and having access to driver's license and registration information. And so really I want to emphasize here that while it may seem that this data practices protection is only for specific members of the community, one thing I want to highlight to everybody is in order to track non-citizens, what has to happen is it means that citizens are tracked as well. So any sort of restriction and protection of data for any members of the community helps every member of the community. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Scott, was this for this testifier?
Actually, I have a question for him and the previous testifier.
Okay, we've got a list going, so we'll get to you.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chan, for your testimony. With that, are there any members of the public who did not sign up who would like to testify? Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair, my name is Rich Neumeister. I have 2 points. One is if you look at 17112 subdivision 7, which is not in the bill, you will see that there's the Federal Privacy Protection Act, which was done because of a tragedy almost 20 years ago with actress Maria Soledano, that certain restrictions of how data can be, driver's license data can be disseminated. So my first question is, how will this impact that dissemination to all those parties for insurance purposes, for service of process, all those kinds of things? and what kind of new standards will there be for that? Again, we're not talking about documents. We're talking about basic information, name and an address, for law enforcement purposes, and generally, as we all know about the computer systems, they get the photo. And some other of those private entities may get the photo. That's my first question. And then just on the second point in terms of the A17 amendment, if you look on lines 219 and 220, it's just the point I raised, again, for you as policymakers to know what this may mean or have impact on. Person means anybody in law, requires is something, and then to certify that the person must not use the data for civil immigration purposes. So then I go back now to that 17112, subdivision 7, that, Madam Chair, your counsel may be able to tell you what those exceptions are. Those parties that get that data, if that is not impeded with any other part of this law, will that be then the new standard? So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I just throw out to you two points that I think that are important to at least you as policymakers to know and questions to be answered for the public.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Any other members of the public wishing to testify? All right. Not seeing any, we will move on to member discussion. We'll remind everybody that our discussion and the reason that this bill is here is Article 2. Done a pretty good job so far of sticking to Article 2, so we're going to keep that up. First on the list, I have Representative Feist.
I'm so sorry, Madam Chair, but it wasn't a data thing. I just wanted to say that I strongly support this bill.
Representative Feist, we're going to follow the rules.
That's fair.
Representative Scott.
Wow, harsh.
just remember this when you guys do the same thing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did have a question, one question for each of the previous testifiers, Ms. Iyer and Mr. Chan.
All right. They didn't go far.
They didn't. They were very handy.
They both.
Oh, they're going to share the chair?
We got lots of
one
chairs.
At a time. It's okay.
All right. All right. All right. So, Representative Scott, your question from
Thank you.
Director
Thank you,
Iyer.
Ms. Iyers. I'm wondering what your thoughts are. One of the things that this committee has done in the past is when we're setting up this data sharing thing, one of the things that we also do is to create some sort of requirement for an audit or an audit trail so that the public has a way of going back and making sure that the law is being followed. Is that anything that, and maybe this is to the bill author too, is that something that you believe would be belt suspenders here? Because I think it should be common practice anytime that we're sharing data, in government, that an audit trail should be required. There should be role-based access to that information. There should be, as you put in here, you put the date for the data to be, purged, and then some sort of a data report summary to the public so that they know that the law is actually being followed. So, Ms. Iyers, I know that's a big mouthful from me, but your thoughts.
And Representative Gomez, I apologize when Representative Gomez asked what she needed to do to prepare for this committee. I did not warn you that she was going to ask about audit trails. Director Iyer, if you're able to answer that question.
Thank you so much, Representative Scott. I'm actually going to defer to Mr. Chan on that question. So thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Chan.
Thank you, Representative Scott. I actually helped work on a similar provision in Virginia, and the Virginia data practice did require specific audit trails and audits. One of the things that we learned is that audits, unfortunately, really depend very strongly on whether and how much the individual agencies decides to do those audits. So which is why is an alternative to the audits is what requiring the penalty provisions and specifically the right of action. We feel that those are very strong indicators of preventing people or bad faith actors from breaking these particular data privacy protections. There is nothing, in my understanding, and please, if Department of Public Safety could correct me, from the Department of Public Safety from conducting audits on their own and making sure those are there, but it wasn't as a high of a priority in terms of making it into this amendment specifically. We recognize its value and its use, and I certainly would agree that they are important, but we found that the other provisions and the penalty provisions may be more effective in preventing the release of that data.
And I understand Mr. Hopkins may have some information for us as well.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott and members, so Section 171.12, which contains the will contain the new Subdivision 11, which you see in the A17 amendment, that's the section that deals with data practices for the driver's licenses, and Subdivision 1A of that section, which isn't amended in the bill, which is current law, requires DVS to have role-based access for its driver and vehicle services information system. It requires audit trails and already requires an independent biennial audit. So those things will also pertain to these new non-compliant licenses as well.
With my law professor hat on, we'll always remind members, if you go back and look at the overall statute, a lot of times you can get the answers if you have time to do that. Representative Scott.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Hopkins, for that answer. Because my response to you, Mr.
Chan,
was going to be, the penalties are fine, but how is the person ever going to know if there's no audit trail created? How are they going to know who's responsible for sharing or mis-sharing your information? Thank you. And Ms. Ayers, one question that I had is, how will the agents, and maybe this again is for the author too, how will the DVS agents and those folks, how will they know what can be shared and what can't? How will that be explained, and how will they be educated to know the answer to that question?
Director Iyer.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Becker Finn. Thank you, Representative Scott. That would be a matter of, I think, both a matter of training and whether that would be issues that would be addressed in some in administrative rulemaking, but frankly, I think it would be mostly a training issue to make sure that they understand those issues. Thank you.
All right. Not seeing any other members on the list. Representative Gomez, Representative Perez Vega, any closing remarks on House File 4?
Just our thanks for your consideration, Madam Chair and members. And again, thank you to Representative Scott for working with us.
All right. With that, we'll move on to the vote. I will renew my motion that House File 4, as amended, be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you, members. Are any of our other authors here? Okay, well, I'm just going to move it. All right, the next bill on our agenda is House File 34. I understand that Representative Jordan is on her way. But I'm going to go ahead and move that House File 34 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Members, for those of you who are here last biennium, this is not a new issue. And with that, we also have a DE1 amendment. The DE1 amendment, I will move the DE1 amendment, I can tell you, because I was part of getting it there, gets the language in line with the agreed upon language that we had later in session last year in the data practices omnibus. So it was developed with help from Minkoji. There's a letter in your packets and with consultation with members on both sides of the aisle. So with that, to get House File 34 in the shape that the author would like, I am going to move the DE1. All those in favor of the DE1, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? All right. The motion prevails. The DE1 is House File 34 is amended. And sorry, I'm trying to stall for Representative Jordan to get here. So someone from House Research, maybe Nathan, if you could explain House File 34 and what it does.
So, Madam Chair and members, if you look at the DE1 amendment that the committee just adopted, So this deals with data that a political subdivision, so like a unit of local government, might receive from someone seeking to obtain a license. It classifies only two different kinds of documents as private data on individuals for the case of natural persons, or non-public data in the case of like business firms. And those two kinds of data are tax returns and bank account statements. All other kinds of data that would be submitted in the application license would be public by default under the Government Data Practices Act. And then there's also a destruction requirements, getting back to sort of our records retention discussion earlier, notwithstanding section 138.17, so regardless of whatever kind of retention schedule that local unit of government has already set up for itself, the bill requires that the data collected as part of the license application program that's classified as private, so again, just tax returns and bank account statements, have to be destroyed no later than 90 days after a final decision on the application.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hopkins. Sorry, Representative Jordan, I knew how much you wanted to get this bill done this year, so I went ahead and moved it. We've already amended it, and Mr. Hopkins just explained it. So is there anything you would like to say about House File 34 before we, as amended, before we get to your testifier?
I just want to let folks know that this is a bill that came to me from a constituent, and so I think it's important that we really take into consideration the bills that our constituents bring to us. So that's where this bill originated from. I think a lot of people, I'm always interested in bill origin stories. And with that, I actually think it would be better to have the constituent who brought me the bill really talk about why this bill is needed.
All right. Mr. Steger, please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning. Is that working?
Yep.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Representative Jordan, Representative Scott, members of the committee. Thank you so much for inviting me to testify today. My name is Philip Steger. I am a constituent of Representative Jordan, and I have both a personal and professional knowledge of this specific issue. Because of its sensitivity, I'm going to focus on the kind of arm's length professional level and just sort of contextualize that a bit as the fact I was for a while, I'm now a business owner, I was for a while a practicing attorney at a large Minneapolis law firm and specialized in the Minnesota Data Government Data Practices Act. Representing both private constituents making government data requests as well as public entities responding to them. And so I have a knowledge of how these things work, and it's part of that that really made this particular issue jump out for me, as well as the other personal knowledge that I have. And what I want to just say about that is, you know, as everyone knows, the Government Data Practices Act presumes that all data collected, kept, maintained by a government entity is public data. And there's great policy reasons for that. I'm not here to debate those, unless there is a specific statutory exception for the type of data. And so the way the Government Data Practices Act has evolved is by people like me, right, coming to you and saying, hey, there's an issue with this specific thing, not intended, but it has really major implications and risks for private citizens. So would you please consider making that amendment, so in that exception. And in this case, we're dealing with data that is collected by governments, public governments and subdivisions that issue licensing decisions. And subdivisions need a lot of discretion, a lot of leeway to decide what kinds of information they need in order to make licensing decisions. And so great discretion is given to them to set those, what those data requirements are for each of their licensing in each of their jurisdictions. And I would understand not wanting to get involved in prescribing what those might be. But it can happen, and it does happen in some jurisdictions, that some of those licensing requirements and the data that's requested to be submitted to license application reviewers can be extremely sensitive, not just to the business owner, but to anyone who would invest in that business. And so this particular issue affects any private person who wants to start, grow, or invest in a business in the state of Minnesota where a subdivision might require a request this specific information. And this is happening in at least one jurisdiction. And that information includes tax returns and unredacted bank account statements. I won't say anything more about that, except to say that is why we are coming with a specific request to amend Chapter 13 by adding a section that specifically marks that data as private, and that has a 90-day destruction date after the licensing decision is made. We did that in consultation with Representative Jordan, Representative Scott. I'm so grateful to both of you for your attention to this. I know the entire committee looked at this in the previous section, as well as members of Minkoji, Rich, and Matt, who were really open and having a great conversation about how do we properly balance the public interest in government data being open and accessible, and at the same time protect private citizens and persons from potential criminalization of that data, criminal use of that data for purposes of fraud. And hence why I'm staying very vague about it, because I don't want to provide a blueprint for how to do that by asking for a change. So that's why I'm here, to ask that you support this. I also ask that you move this as quickly as possible and expedite this, because it is an open, vulnerable risk right now to at least one business in one jurisdiction.
All right, thank you for your testimony. I'll have you stick here in case anyone has any questions. There's hardly anyone else here now, but are there any members of the public who would wish to testify on House File 34? Oh, should have known. Mr. Neumeister.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. Again, it was a pleasure working with the folks. Again, one of the unique things about how this came about was because of gangster days and corruption in Minneapolis of the liquor industry, that they continuously asked for that. But it's important, though, to illustrate one point, and as you are involved with some of these laws, and you're going to get, a seminar next week or something from some folks. Parts of the deal is, what kind of data is government collecting? Particularly with this kind of sensitive data, what they could have easily asked, which many places do, that's why you don't see a lot of it in the bowels of government, is they say, okay, when they interview, show me your stuff. And they look at it, and okay, then they sign off. This government entity, which is like to keep it, I guess, forever, or whatever their retention schedule says. I'm impressed with the 90-day schedule. I'd even say lesser than that. They don't really need it for 90 days. And you've got to remember, data shared in one government entity can be disseminated to other parts if there's an inquiry. There's no prohibition. And you don't want to start getting no prohibition. And this piece, you know, I mean, you could go forever. But Madam Chair, I just wanted to share those points.
All right. Thank you. Any other members of the public? Otherwise, we'll move on to member discussion. Representative Niska.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for bringing this forward. My only concern with this bill is that it might encourage political subdivisions to ask for this data. I don't understand why this is being requested in the first place. It's obviously extremely sensitive, and it creates a lot of risks. I think sides of the political aisle could cite examples of this kind of data being shared, tax returns and things like that, in ways that are dangerous. And so I just hope that nobody, no political subdivision sees this as a green light or encouragement to start collecting more of this kind of data. And I'd be interested to hear from someone from the city of Minneapolis or someplace that wanted to explain why they are collecting the data in the first place. And so definitely understand your concern, and we need to do something about it. And I hope that no one gets the wrong idea about what this body thinks about collecting this kind of data.
Yeah, that's often the rub with data issues, is that when we bring them up here, it actually highlights the flaws in the system and some of those weak spots. So I appreciate your comment, Representative Niska. Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this may be a question for nonpartisan staff, but I was just curious about retroactivity. So what would happen with the data that's already been collected?
Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, so there's no effective date in the bill that would make anything retroactive. But the classification, I believe, would pertain to data that is currently in existence, that's currently retained. So it would require, I think, the destruction period to start rolling, and I think they would have to purge data if they had it, if it was longer than the 90-day period.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that, and it's nice to have that on the record. I appreciate that.
Yep, thank you. Appellate attorneys helping us make sure we got stuff on the record. Any other discussion? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, I know that your relationship with the city of Minneapolis has grown, shall we say. And so what explanation did they offer for asking for this type of information? Why did they feel that it was necessary? Because I agree with Representative Niska that this is a slippery slope.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I can take that. Okay. I want to start out by saying, for the attorneys in the room, which I'm not one of them, the intention of this bill is in no way to ask political subdivisions to start collecting this data. That is not the intention of this bill. This came about because of this data dates back many decades, well before I was born, when my parents were, before my parents were in school even, to times where there were organized mobs and gangsters, like in the movies, using certain businesses to conduct mob business. And so the city started collecting certain data to ensure that there wasn't racketeering happening from gangsters and mobsters and the like. So that's why the city started collecting this data. I think as times have changed and we aren't, playing out Godfather movies in my district, it's a very nice place, please come. As our culture has shifted, our laws need to shift too, especially as it relates to technology and freedom of information requests. I think if we think about this practically as any individuals who can and do invest in businesses, I would not. If I wanted to invest in a business and I learned that my tax returns and bank account statements could possibly be obtained by someone who wasn't me, I would seriously consider not investing in that business. And that shouldn't be the reason why I don't invest in a business and why any one of us shouldn't invest in the business in a business. So that's kind of the history of why this has evolved in the way that it has. But I do hope that other political subdivisions don't see this bill as an invitation to start collecting data. I also do think that I care a lot about privacy and openness for governments, which is why I'm so thankful to Minkoji and Mr. Neumeister and everyone else who has worked on this to try to really narrowly tailor the bill and to create that destruct clause.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so I'm wondering, I know this is going to the General Register, but I'm wondering, in light of Representative Mueller's question, if we shouldn't amend it to say, and all past data of this kind should be destroyed if it's been held for more than 90 days. But that's an awful, whatever, if she wants to respond to that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I mean, everyone's kind of nodding. I just don't know, amending it right now would be the way to do it. But it was fun. Nathan was nodding until I said that. I imagine this is not a controversial bill, and I think we all sort of agree and want to get to the same place. So I would encourage folks to talk about that and see if that's something that we can do quickly. Representative Jordan, I will ask you, though, we could lay it over if you want to work on that amendment, and we could move it real quickly next week so that we're sending a fully put together bill to the General Register. I believe that would be leadership's preference with the bills I send to the General Register. Would that be okay with you?
Madam Chair, yes. My inclination is that's a great idea. I think it's good to check with folks who aren't standing around and to check with people, because we have worked on this in coalition with folks, and so I want to check with the folks that have been a big part of making this bill. So I'm very amenable to doing that. I will try to be on time next week. Sorry, you know how it goes around here with meetings and trying to be in multiple places at once. So happy to work on that if that is the route that this committee would go.
Yeah.
Sounds like a way to make the bill better.
Yep, and that's why we have committees. So that would be my plan then. So I will lay this over. And then we'll pick it back up next week. We won't do a full discussion. We won't have testifiers. We'll just move that amendment, discuss if there's any discussion to the language in that amendment, and then we'll go ahead and move to the general register. That would be the plan at that point. All right. And if you don't even want to be here, that's fine. I'll get the work done whether you're here or not, Representative Jordan. Representative Johnson, anything to the bill before I lay it over?
Just real quickly, I understand why they're pushing this forward. Now, I'm just wondering if we actually need to do this bill. Maybe that city should quit, because it goes back so antiquated, back into the 20s when they were collecting this data. Maybe they should just quit collecting the data.
I mean, great suggestion, but I'd imagine if it was that simple, it would have happened by now, and Representative Jordan would not be bringing this bill forward. So
I'm also concerned.
Yep, you can't talk over me, though. I'll let you talk.
You never let me finish.
I give you plenty of time to talk, Representative Johnson, but you got to let me finish my sentences. Representative Johnson.
I'm just concerned that other cities might start collecting this data and another opportunity for the data breach to happen.
Representative Jordan, any response?
Yes. Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Johnson. The League of Cities and the City of Minneapolis feel that this is necessary.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. Having just come from representing the city for the last 8 years, I can tell you the last thing they want is more data to have to manage and take care of. So I don't think they'd have any problems.
All right. Thank you, Representative Carroll. With that, I'm going to lay over House File 34 as amended, and we'll see it again soon on Data Day on Tuesday. With that, I think I did see Representative Nelson here, so we'll go ahead and move to House File 62. I will move that House File 62 be recommended to be referred to the Labor and Industry Finance and Policy Committee. Representative Nelson, I believe you have an A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape you would like. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
All right. I will move the A2 amendment to House File 62. You want to tell us real quick what the A2 does?
Madam Chair, as Mr. Neumeister was referenced in the previous bill, Mr. Neumeister came to me with some issues about the clarity of how it was written. The amendment just kind of clarifies how the data is, what data, it makes it more simple to understand which data is private, which is public. And the amendment, the language for this came from Nkogi. And I hope I'm saying that right, but it came from them, and I worked with our staff, and they thought it was a good idea, and it said it just simplifies how it states. There was some confusion from some people about what was private, what was non-public. So.
All right, I like simple. All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye. 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 Opposed? All right, the amendment is adopted. Representative Nelson, a two-year bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 62 is about, you know, the very small portion that's going to the Labor Committee. It has to do with funding the PERB Board. That's the Public Employee Relations Board. Representative Carlson put this back into effect. For a long time, it was dormant in 2014, but they've never funded it so they can do their job. And why this is important to have the Public Employee Relations Board is it saves money for the unions that representing the employees. It saves money for the employees, and it saves money for the employers, because currently they have to go to court if they have an issue that they want to get resolved. And by having to go to court, they got to hire lawyers, and there's a lot more cost to it. By having the PERB board, similar to the National Labor Relations Board, that they can work these things out. And as in the past, there's a thing here that in the past there was 31 cases, 2 were filed by individuals, 21 by unions. They were issued complaints in 10 cases. The rest were either settled or they were withdrawn because they found there was no thing. And this was done through the PERB board when they were operating. So right now, that's what this bill does. And I have a testifier here, Dick Casperi, who can probably explain things better than I can. But that's, you know, the reason why we're here, which looks like it's the main portion of the bill has to do with giving the PERB board the access to the information and telling them what they can release and what they can't release and when it can be released. And that's what the, again, the amendment dealt with that portion.
All right. With that, we'll go to your testifier, Mr. Caspari.
Yes.
All right. Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Beckford Finn. I'm Dick Caspari. I am an attorney with the IFO, the Interfaculty Organization. I am also the alternate employee representative member of the Public Employment Relations Board. As many of you may know, the board is a tripartite body. It has members who represent public employers, a member and an alternate who represent public employers, a member and an alternate who represent employee unions, and a member and an alternate who represent the public and are neutral. The charge of the PIRB is to help resolve labor disputes as efficiently and consistently as possible. And that's a charge the board pursued up to the beginning of the current biennium. This bill makes several important changes in law. First of all, it restores the board's jurisdiction. It was a bit of a strange ride for the board to be open for business, to be intaking and handling cases, and then to have to close its door to new cases as of July 1, 21. This bill will allow us to reopen, and we hope stay open. It also makes a couple of minor changes in law that are addressed primarily to the board's ability to properly manage protected data in the course of its proceedings. And secondly, also to allow the board to do what other quasi-judicial bodies do when they're deliberating on a contested case, which is to deliberate privately. Section 2 of the bill, I think, can be summarized as saying that it makes clear that the board's investigative data collected by the board after we receive a charge, when we're trying to determine whether there's probable cause to issue a complaint in a particular matter, that investigative data is protected during the investigative process. Now, if a complaint is filed and actual litigation begins, those proceedings become public in very much the same manner as court proceedings would. The documentation, the evidence, motions, decisions, briefs, et cetera. But prior to the issuance of a complaint, it's very important, first of all, that this is in keeping with 1339 of the Data Practices Act, and just really a matter of clarification in that regard. Secondly, it's also very important to the board's efforts that we make in every case to try to see if something can be resolved pre-litigation by negotiation, mediation, or arbitration. And having that investigative data confidential during that phase of proceedings is important to the party's willingness to proceed in that manner. As to the Section 3 of the bill, other quasi-judicial bodies addressing employment-related matters deliberate in private, and there's a good reason for that. The tripartite structure of the board ensures that we have vigorous debate and broad perspectives brought to bear on every case. And that debate is essential to our ability to craft the narrowest and clearest decision we can that's necessary to resolve a particular case. As is true in, I think, just about anybody, judicial or quasi-judicial, that sort of frank discussion between colleagues occurs best when it occurs in private. And with that, I'd say thank you for your consideration.
All right. Any other members of the public wishing to testify on this bill? All right. With that, we'll move on to member discussion. Any discussion to the bill, members? All right. Closing comments, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Again, this is when Representative Lyndon Carlson retired from the legislature, he kind of passed this to me. This had been his baby, trying to get it funded. We've been fighting to he's been fighting to get it funded for years, and so hopefully I can bring this across the finish line, and Representative Carlson will be proud.
Sounds good. I renew my motion that House File 62, as amended, be recommended to be referred to the Labor and Industry Finance and Policy Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
All right. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to Labor and Industry. Members, our last bill of the day, House File 179, Representative Hanson J. I will move that House File 179 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Members, this is another cleanup bill that we basically had agreement on at the end of the last biennium, but didn't actually get it to the governor's desk. Representative Hanson, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. I'm really glad to be back in front of you with this bill. I am here alone today because lack of virtual testifying options has limited the ability for my testifiers to be here. So if you'd like to review last year's hearing, it was on March 8th of 2022 in this committee, so I'd encourage you to go and look at that video to hear firsthand from people affected by this. This bill seeks to allow post-divorce surname changes to be handled similarly to how they're handled when they're done in conjunction with divorce proceedings. Since it's customary in our country for women to change our names upon marriage, women are disproportionately impacted by the current post-divorce name change requirements. Though, as we know, as Chair Becker-Finn shared with us, this impacts any person who changes their name after divorce, and so this is a broad issue for many people. Names are important to the human sense of identity. Changing your name can shift your entire identity as well. And it's my hope that this will help more women and people revert to their surnames from pre-marriage following a divorce should they choose to do so. We know divorce can be a painful and difficult experience. Nobody gets married looking forward to divorce. And there's often a desire to hurry up and get it over with, and maybe a sense of urgency to begin separate lives sooner than later. And with nearly one in four marriages ending because of domestic violence, expeditiously finalizing a divorce can also be a matter of safety for many people. Some divorcees choose to change their name at the time of divorce. However, for a variety of reasons, it's not the case for everyone. And for those who choose to wait, changing their surname post-divorce requires a court fee and proof of identity from two witnesses, which is not required if you do this during the post-divorce process. So this bill seeks to provide a more streamlined process for divorcees seeking to change their name and revert to the name that they had before the marriage was dissolved, with a copy of the dissolution order and a birth certificate, and without the need for a national background check. We do have some questions about addressing line 2.19 and 2.20, which says in this state, to continue to address marriages that occurred out of state, so I am open to that. And then we're also open to reviewing line, I think it's 3.2, about the implementation of a gross misdemeanor, though we do want to make sure that there's protections for potential fraud or, you know, of the courts. And so with that, I'll see if there's any other questions, but I want to just again remind folks that last year our testifiers were folks from domestic violence prevention programs and women's advocates, as well as the daughter of a woman who struggled to change her name 20 plus years after divorce. And this stayed a part of her identity and was something that she really wanted to get rid of, but it was a big challenge for her. This woman who shared her testimony for her mother lives right in my city, and so I'm really happy to bring this bill to you because this is what it looks like to listen on the doors and bring this work to the legislature.
All right. And as you noted, you weren't able to bring any of your testifiers with you today. but thank you for giving us that date. It's much easier to find things when we refer to those. We'll ask if there's anyone from the public wishing to testify on this bill. All right, not seeing anyone, we will go to member discussion. Representative Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I can step into that role of sharing personal experience and how this bill would impact people. I was married briefly for about a year and a half when I was very young, and changed my name, and it was very bad, traumatic marriage. When we got divorced, the idea of going through that process, incurring those fees, changing my name back, just was overwhelming to me. So I lived with my ex-husband's name for about 6 years before I remarried, and it was just awful to see his name on all my documents. I got married right when I graduated from law school, and I made sure that my diploma and my license were all in my new married name just because I wanted to leave that name behind. So this is just so practical, such an elegant, important solution to a really very real problem that, that people struggle with. So thank you for bringing it.
All right. Thank you, Representative Feist. Representative Niska.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen. This makes a lot of sense to me, and I just really have a practical question, and I just wanted to double check. It seems like the language contemplates getting a divorce in one district court and potentially having this proceeding in another district court. I just wanted to know, and I haven't watched the previous hearing on this. I was curious if we have any perspective from the judicial branch about whether that creates any workability problems at all, or if that's, you know, something that's simple for them to administer. I'm just curious about that. Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative. These are district court documents, and so I am not a lawyer, so let me just preface that. You all here have much more experience than I do in this realm, but it is my understanding that one document from one district court in Minnesota is acceptable in another district court in Minnesota. I see a couple lawyers nodding their heads here, and so I can defer to you if there's other feedback from other people, but as far as I know, within the state, and that's why I brought up that if the line about in this state, if there's out-of-state marriages, if we need to change that, I'm open to doing that as well.
Well, and Representative Hansen, we're sending this to General Register, yes. So if you want to change that.
Yes. I was just waiting for feedback. If anybody else wanted me to, I did not plan to, but should anybody come forward, I'm open to that.
Got it. Yes. Follow up, Representative Niska.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, that makes sense to me. I just wanted to make sure that there wasn't some administrative issue that I am not thinking of right now, but it does make so it makes sense to me that the district court, Kandy, Ohio County District Court, is going to recognize a divorce decree issued in Hennepin County or something like that. But just was curious if that had been at all raised in the past. But
yeah,
this bill seems like a good idea.
And part of the issue too is that, like, when you change your name as part of the divorce decree, it's just included in that document, and so there's no extra fee or anything like that. And part of the issue is that if just a little bit more time has gone on, now all of a sudden it's administratively and financially really difficult for folks. But I know that was, nothing came up last year when we discussed this as far as it being unworkable in any way.
Thank you.
Next on the list, I have Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair Becker Finn and Representative Hansen for this bill. And I just wanted to ask a question. This is an expedition and a simplification to return your name to your name on your birth certificate, and I'm just wondering if there was any consideration given to not having to change your name to the name on your birth certificate. There are many reasons one might not want to have that name either.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you for the question. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Finke. That is certainly something that I think is important that we continue to talk about. We know that people feel more empowered when their name matches their identity. That's not part of this bill, but I would support conversations around that on another initiative.
Any follow-up, Representative Finke?
Just to say that a divorce decree is an opportunity for many trans people to authentically live their life, and I would like to explore the idea that we could find that way into this kind of work in the future.
Thank you. Any further discussion to the bill? All right. Closing comments, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members, for letting me come back solo to present this bill. And again, if you'd like to hear that hearing, it was on March 8th, and I'd encourage you to listen to the voices. And thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you. With that, I renew my motion that House File 179 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Hansen, please extend our thanks to your testifiers. We'll go back and watch. Any questions before we wrap up for the week? All right, members, you can expect, like I said, Tuesday will be Department of Administration will be giving us a presentation on Chapter 13. Obviously something that's going to come up regularly in this committee. Some of us have watched that presentation multiple times, but we know we have lots of members who haven't gotten that presentation, and we'll have some other data issues to talk about on Tuesday. So watch out for that email from Anna, and we'll go from there. All right. Good week. Thank you, members. With that, we are adjourned.